Hello, and welcome to this podcast recording. My name is Andrea Pride. I'm the project staff on the ISB's Insurance Contracts Project, and with me is Daryl Scott, an ISB member. Today's recording is going to discuss the ISB's meeting held last week in March in Norwalk. The meeting was an ISB-only meeting because the ISB and FASB are now undertaking different approaches to their projects on insurance contracts. Daryl, would you mind elaborating on a little bit of that, please?
Certainly, Andrea. The FASB held a meeting in February in which they decided that they would take an approach to developing insurance guidance that would effectively take their existing insurance guidance and develop guidance along or
from US GAAP.
Develop guidance based on their current US GAAP. The reason why the FASB have taken this approach is because they have an existing body of guidance which in many circumstances their constituents believe works and is appropriate to their needs at the moment. At the same time, the FASB acknowledges that some of the joint discussions that the two boards have set out potentially good direction for them to consider in the future. And by taking a targeted amendment approach, they believe that will be more appropriate for them in terms of actually developing future guidance and will help them to do it in a way which causes the least possible disruption to existing insurance users in the US. The ISB has noted this. We've been aware that the meeting was coming up in February, and we understand the rationale that the FASB is following. But we believe that it arises because of the difference in circumstances between the two boards. The FASB is working with existing guidance, which works in practice. The ISB has got a far greater need to develop new guidance because our existing guidance isn't as operationally effective as theirs is. The two boards will continue to be aware of what's happening in each other's space on this, but we won't be holding joint meetings on the issues going forward. It was interesting in March that we actually did have the FASB around the table with us, and that gave the FASB the opportunity to hear the arguments we were making, to potentially and in fact actually ask us questions on particular issues if they believed those issues were pertinent to their own considerations, but at the same time allow us to develop our arguments and reach the conclusions that we believed were appropriate for our constituents.
Yes, so in that meeting, the ISB discussed two of the five topics that we had targeted in our 2013 exposure draft, and that was as they related to non-participating contracts only. In general, the team's approach to structuring these redeliberations is to consider first how we should modify our exposure draft proposals as they apply to non-participating contracts, and then from there consider whether there's any further modifications needed to take account of participating features. And this reflects in part the fact that the participating contracts are more complicated and have bigger issues in some way to consider. At the same time, we'll be considering all the other issues that have been raised in the comment letters and thinking about how we should approach those, and I'll talk about that in a bit later. So the staff papers this month proposed that the board should modify its proposal slightly for unlocking and other comprehensive income, largely in the direction suggested by the comment letters, but largely confirm the core principles in the 2013 exposure draft. So what this means is that for the unlocking, the board agreed to unlock the contractual service margin for both cash flows and risk adjustment relating to future service, and also to make the change that if the contractual service margin is exhausted and losses are recognised, that the entity would first need to reverse any of those losses before rebuilding the contractual service margin in the event of a future favourable change in estimate. For the other comprehensive income decisions, the board agreed that there should be an accounting policy choice on whether to put the effective discount rate changes in either OCI or in P&L, and which means that we've confirmed the fact that there are circumstances when OCI would be used, but that also mismatches could be avoided through the use of profit and loss. However, that wasn't plain sailing, and there are still some concerns of board members remaining about how this approach would work, and we have some follow-up work to do on that. So would you like to elaborate on some of those concerns, please, Daryl?
I think predominantly, and perhaps to talk about both issues at the same time, I think the unlocking decision was supported by all the board members, and I think it was because we heard a common view from our constituents There was a substantial amount of support for unlocking, a substantial amount of support for the symmetry in the treatment of profits and of losses first, and then the recovery of profits through the profit and loss. And then a fairly consistent view that, the risk adjustment should also be unlocked for. And I think from a board perspective, we could also see a conceptual argument for the way that would be treated. And we could see the parallels between that treatment and the treatment in our new revenue standard. So I think there was a lot of comfort with that. OCI is a lot more difficult. It's partly because of the nature of the way OCI is used in IFRS 9 and the way that treatment will work, and the fact that it creates difficulties at the starting point in terms of the way insurers and other companies for that matter need to think about their asset treatment. So that in itself already creates this mismatch issue. OCI, when it comes to looking at the liability side, certainly in my view has a rationale. There is a good reason for thinking about OCI. But the difference between the asset liability treatment creates these difficulties of mismatch. And that meant that from a board perspective, we had two choices to resolve it. In fact, perhaps three choices. The first choice is to say that we just walk away. We either have OCI mandatory or we have no OCI. And we leave it at that and accept that the approach from an IFRS perspective is that you look at the individual contracts, in this case the insurance contracts, and you don't look at the other part of the balance sheet. I don't think the board particularly found that attractive, although certainly some board members expressed that as the simplest view to this approach. Taking that off the table then, we then had to find a way to put in place the mechanics for an allowing an option that helped entities remove the mismatch that might have existed. From an overall perspective, an option is a very difficult thing for an ISB, for the ISB to consider. Options are things that add complexity, they make it more difficult for users to understand financial statements, and we really try to put options into financials as little as we possibly can. In the circumstance, in the end, the board believed that an option does make sense, but we also believed that there needs to be some safeguards around the way that option works. The way that we've actually decided to do it is through an accounting policy election. Now, accounting policy election, because of the fallback to IAS 8, already contains some safeguards that are built into the IAS 8 process. But we did ask the staff to develop further guidance to help people understand and contextualize IAS 8 when they're actually making these decisions. We thought also about the level, and we felt that the portfolio was the right level, that you couldn't go too high or you'd lose the benefit of the mismatch that you were trying to get rid of, and you couldn't go too low because you would actually make it operationally too difficult to put in practice. The end consequence of that, though, is that we now have a decision to do OCI, which I think is what many of our constituents called for. We have a decision to make it optional in a way, which many of our constituents called for. The next step in this process is for us to now understand how we can control the use of it to make it easier to understand from a user perspective, and how we can actually decide what exactly needs to go into OCI and what doesn't, and then deal with the complexity that that creates.
Great, thanks. And that's something that the staff will be looking at in the coming months. And as I said at the meeting, I'm keen that we try and anchor that as firmly as possible within the existing safeguards that are in existing IFRSs, because that will keep the body of standards more consistent as a whole. So in the more immediate future, though, let's have a look at what we're going to be discussing next. So the next ISB meeting on insurance contracts will be in April, and we're planning to discuss the proposals for insurance contract revenue. After that, we'll have dealt with the main part of the model for non-participating contracts, except for transition. In April, we also plan to outline our approach for the issues raised that were not on the topics that were targeted in the 2013 exposure draft, and that will include a consideration of which issues the staff should ask the board to re-deliberate, which means that we'll be saying that some topics, perhaps we have disagreement in the comment letters, nonetheless, there may be no new information raised in the comment letters. And so for those, we'll recommend that the board does not address those topics. Others, there may be some simplifications that we could make or some modifications that could deal with the topic relatively simply, or perhaps there's new information in the comment letters on that topic. And so those will be the ones that would be candidates for reconsideration by the board. After we've done the April meeting, we'll begin to start thinking about what changes will be needed to reflect participating features in insurance contracts, and we expect that those discussions will continue throughout the rest of 2014. So thank you for listening to this podcast recording, and we will be working away on the April meeting and updating you in the near future.